When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah, and some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Don't forget to pack the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies for a post-errands pick-me-up. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
From the king of sports books comes the king of sports podcasts. Unleashed. Presented by BetMGM. Here's your hosts, Jerry Ferrara and Olivia Harlan Decker.
Let's get it going. Welcome to Unleashed. And you know, all is right in the world because Tom Brady is back in camp. So there was some speculation. Tom Brady was on The Masked Singer. Do you buy that one at all? I love that conspiracy theory.
You know, in the past, I wouldn't have bought it, but I don't know. He's like a social media guy now. He's got all this. I do kind of buy it, although that would be bad for The Masked Singer if that secret got out. Be good for them if he actually was on the show. I'm kind of buying that, although that's a tough reason to miss camp. I liked it better when he was just paid leave. I'm going on vacation. I don't like it as much if he was like, oh, I took 10 days off to go on The Masked Singer.
Yeah, I know. But the whole thing's just shady. I wish he would just say what it is, because the team said it was pre-planned that Tom Brady was going to miss 11 days of practice. But I'm not buying the vacation story. Which NFL player, even if you are Tom Brady, decides to take a vacation in August? You don't do that. But the craziest Tom Brady news that broke even after that is when Dana White, did you see this?
I worked to put that deal together for Brady and Gronk to come to the Raiders. And it was almost a done deal. And at the last minute, Gruden blew the deal up and said that he didn't want him. And hell broke loose, man. It was crazy. And Brady was already looking at houses, and it wasn't being said yet that Gronk was coming. So Las Vegas would have had Brady and Gronk the year that the Bucs won the Super Bowl, except Gruden blew the deal up.
The whole thing's so shady, but Gronk confirmed it.
It confirmed it. And what I want to know is that was one of the best kept secrets in all of the NFL because, you know, no one in the media reported that ever. I know like the Raiders at one point, I think were definitely listed as a team before he went to Tampa. So cheers, I guess, to all the insiders at the Raiders and Brady's camp, because that never got leaked to my knowledge. And then I love Dana White just exposing it all casually. I watched that clip 100 times. I couldn't believe that's the guy I think I want to go to dinner with, because I feel like he'll tell you everything because he just doesn't care.
Oh, that's a great. Okay. Let's play this game. You can pick three people in pro sports, let's say, you can sit and have a drink with, go to dinner with. Dana White's one of yours. Give me two others.
Dana White for sure. Because like I said, I feel like Dana White will just tell you stuff because I think his filter, I think he's in that like, I don't really care territory, what you think if I break secrets. Another one, you know, I would have said Jeter up until the captain came out. Now I feel like I know too much. I'm going to tee it up. You know what? I kind of want to maybe Manti Te'o, because I want to talk more about what we're seeing on Netflix. And then
it's so good.
Yeah. And then, I mean, selfishly, my favorite boxer of all time, he's no longer here. I would have picked, because we didn't say alive or dead, I would have picked Arturo Gatti, one of my favorite fighters of all time. And I would have loved to have gotten some stories from him.
Okay, I'm going to throw one other name in the ring. How about Antonio Brown? We talked a lot about him last week, but wouldn't he be a good dinner date?
I think so. You definitely would be entertained, you know? But I think Dana White is definitely on my number one right now. Just because, man, what a bomb he dropped casually.
Crazy. Crazy. No, that was good. You mentioned the Manti Te'o doc. It is so good. I was texting you this weekend. You've got to watch it. Because I was flabbergasted watching how it played out. And I've got a couple issues with the doc, but I want to save that for our Unleashed segment. That's coming up. But, you know, we've got a really good guest this week. Are you excited for this one?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm ready. It's because we're really going to start digging into the football. So I'm ready.
Yeah. And this is the guy you want to talk to. It's Andrew Brandt. He's seen it all. He's a Sports Illustrated writer, former Green Bay Packers exec, NFL business analyst. It's going to be great to pick his brain leading up to the season, especially with stuff that have to do with salary cap and contracts and free agents still. And boy, we got a lot to get with him on that. But I'm just glad that you're sitting in your seat. I'm the one who is racing here after my baby's doctor appointment, but you were the one with the busier weekend. Tell me about the charity golf tournament. Tell me all about that. Who'd you see there?
Yeah, I'm paying for it today because, you know, weekend away golfing. My wife's like, all right, there's two kids now with your name on it, waiting for you.
You can't be hungover with kids. I've learned that.
Oh, yeah. It was in Detroit. It was the JRLA, the Jalen Rose Leadership Academy. You know, he built the school, literally. Like, he's accomplished so much in his playing career and his post-playing career, and this is arguably one of his greatest accomplishments. So I got invited through an old friend, fellow Knick fan, Ben Lyons. And Olivia, I feel like I failed you. I feel like I failed you on something because, you know, we're doing this show and, like, and, you know, you're a real journalist and I'm trying to keep up. I had a moment to do some journalism and I completely choked. Oh. They were introducing all the celebrities that were playing in the golf event. It was at Detroit Country Club, beautiful club. And it's like, you know, Calvin Johnson and it was Droit Bell. I don't know if you remember Droit Bell, one of the last fullbacks. I actually remember all these great, like, Detroit Midwestern legends, Allen Houston. So we had some Knicks love. And they call me up and you go shake hands with Jalen Rose. And Jalen, being who he is and being super savvy, sees me, smiles, whispers in my ear. He's like, hey, Scott Perry's here playing. We're about to introduce him next. And I walked away. I'm like, oh, so they introduced Scott Perry. I've met him like once or twice, comes out saying hello to everyone. And I shook hands with Scott Perry. And I'm like, this is my moment. I could ask him right now what's going on for real with Donovan Mitchell. And I looked him in the eyes and I went, how you doing, Mr. Perry? Good to see you. And I put my head down. I looked at my shoes and he kept it moving. I mean, he wasn't going to tell me anything anyway. I could have asked a hard question. Oh. I failed you.
Come on. We sent you out there. I mean, if you got per diem, I'd be really mad because then you'd be actually working.
Yeah.
You didn't get per diem from BetMGM, did you?
No, I did not. BetMGM was a prominent sponsor there, especially at the night before party, which was really cool at the Topgolf suite. But yeah, I failed. Journalistically, I failed you and I feel bad. But yeah, I couldn't sneak in any question. I just didn't feel like it was appropriate. And I got nervous. I choked.
Well, I'll tell you what you do in that situation. You kind of, you chum me up and then you ask, but then you make it sound like, you know, you're not going to do anything with this information. And then you get on the mic and that's when you say an unnamed source in the front office told me that's what you do. So you don't have to out him.
You know, it was even so bad. Every time he like looked at his phone, I was sidling up. I just wanted to be like, who's texting you? Is that Danny Ainge? Is that Leon Rowe? Who just emailed you? What's going on? Is that Fournier? So failed you. But it was an all in all great event. Came in third place on the golf.
Oh, wow.
It's hard to imagine that Calvin Johnson was a wide receiver. It's insane. He's like one of the biggest human beings I've ever seen. I shook his hand and like I think my hand like went up to like his, I think he went up to like my forearm. Just huge dude. And yeah, I don't think anyone could have stopped him in the red zone.
That would have been a good picture. Your hand side by side. That would have been a good picture.
Yeah, well, I'm going back up to Detroit next week for another golf tournament, which might cost me my marriage. And Calvin Johnson is slated to play, so maybe I'll do that picture next week.
And ask him to come on the show. I'd love to have him on the show.
Oh, that I already did. I did. So journalistically, I failed you, but podcast sidekick wise, I definitely invited a lot of people on the podcast.
There you go. There you go. Well, speaking of your New York fandom and Scott Perry and all that, but I always wonder this about people from New York. And first of all, as someone who grew up in the Midwest, New York to me is just like, I'm so confused with the boroughs. I'm so confused with all of the schools there. There's like a million, I don't want to say lower tier schools, but you know what I mean? Like Division II, Division III schools, but like your college football fandom probably doesn't run too deep. And we are coming up on week zero. The biggest game, of course, being Northwestern and Nebraska. They're playing in Ireland. I don't really understand that. That could have been my Unleashed, but I want to still talk about Manti Te'o. But college football, does it mean much to you? Do you care?
I do care. Ironically, I definitely care from a sports gambling perspective. I think it's probably even more enjoyable than maybe throwing a few bets than the NFL because it truly is madness. But I'm speaking to all the New York City kids. It is tough when it comes to college sports, even with basketball. St. John's was sort of okay when I was coming up. But in the 90s, Rutgers wasn't quite good yet. Syracuse, like 6 hours away. I feel like I'm closer to Ohio State than Syracuse, just distance-wise. Yeah. So yeah, I've always said my collegiate sports teams are up for grabs. I'm a free agent. I never took to USC or UCLA when I was in LA. So, and obviously my in-laws are trying to get me to Ohio State, and maybe that's what I just do because I live here now. But it's really hard to really care about college sports outside of just being a sports fan because I have no loyalty.
Yeah.
Zero. And I didn't really go to a big-time college or any college.
Yeah. You didn't go to any college?
I did go to a community college for like a year. I was burned. Yeah. I moved to LA when I was 19. I was done.
19. With school. Oh my gosh. Hey, okay. This actually lends itself exactly to my Entourage question. You know, every week for those who are just tuning in, I am watching Entourage for the first time and loving it. Absolutely loving it. And I think I'm watching with a little bit more interest because I have you to talk to every week and I can ask you all the behind the scenes stuff, which is a lot of fun. So my first question is, now that I'm getting deeper and more invested in the show, did you audition? Did you know these guys before the show?
I did not. I did not know any of them. I was 23 years old. I was bouncing around from show to show. I met Kevin Dillon at one of the I auditioned like 25 times.
Oh my
God. I met him at one of the early auditions and I was a fan of his from, you know, Platoon and The Doors. Kevin Dillon's been acting since he was 17. Obviously his brother, Matt Dillon, tremendous actor. So no, it was the old process. It was the old way it was done. And it all leads up to this network test in front of HBO. And I kind of almost choked. It actually was Mark Wahlberg who snapped me out of it. I did my first run of auditions in front of the network and that wasn't very good. And he came out and motioned for me. I'd never met Wahlberg at this point. And he whispered, he was like, "Just want to let you know, you're kind of blowing it right now." And I'm like, "I am?" He's like, "Yeah." Like, you know that moment where everyone says, "This is your time? This is your time." So it was the greatest wake-up call, and luckily I ended up getting the part. No, I didn't know any of those guys.
That's a great story. Oh my God. Did you ever tell him how much that meant to you?
Oh yeah. He claims that he's like, I did that. I'm like, "You know you did that. Don't act like you did." He's like, "No," he's like, he just thought I was really nervous. So he said he didn't want to see me lose out because I was just nervous.
Oh my God. Oh, that's great. Okay, I have another question. When they're smoking weed on the show, are they actually smoking weed?
I am the perfect person to answer this question because it was my character who was always smoking or rolling the weed.
That's true.
You know, whenever there's a scene, sometimes it's written in that we're smoking, sometimes it's not. But all actors, even if you don't have a lot of lines, you ask for like business, meaning like, give me an activity while I'm here. So I'm not just standing here waiting for these guys to talk. Mm-hmm. My move was always, I'm going to smoke a joint or or roll a blunt or something. So no, you don't smoke real weed on the show because a lot of the times those scenes are at like 7:30 in the morning and you have a whole 15-hour day ahead of you. There is this herbal tobacco, which is not harmful, so they say. Obviously, it does not get you stoned, but it looks green and it burns exactly like weed does. So herbal tobacco.
Okay, that's good to know. So anytime you see that.
Most of the time. I mean, all of the time.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
On the record. Okay, another question. Why is your character named Turtle? I don't think that's been told yet as far as
Never explained.
What?
Never explained. I used to always ask Doug Allen in the early years, my question was always, what's Turtle's real name?
Yeah.
And he always said, we'll reveal it in season 8. I don't know yet. And probably thinking we never get to season 8. We did get to season 8. So his name, his real name does come out. I won't ruin it for you. Never explained why Turtle, but I did forget to tell Le'Veon Bell a story that's connected to Entourage and Adrian Peterson. Adrian Peterson, as you will see, did a cameo in Entourage playing himself. And I met him and I walked up and very, very nice guy and shook his hand. And it is like a vice grip. It is the firmest handshake I've ever encountered in my life. We have crew members, big, burly teamsters and grips with these big meat hook for hands. He was breaking hands left and right. I did want to warn Le'Veon Bell. Like he, you know, obviously we know he's strong. He's got hands. I mean, it was the firmest handshake. It actually hurt. I had to bite down not to like whimper. So anyway.
Bigger than Calvin Johnson's handshake?
Not bigger, stronger.
Stronger.
Just hurt. It just hurt.
Oh my God. Okay. And my last question, you should see my notes here in my phone as I'm watching Entourage. And keep in mind, I'm usually giving the baby a bottle and typing this out. Do they really smoke weed? Oh, exhausting. Okay. So that's my Entourage questions for the week. Next week, I'll have more for you because I've got my long flight to London and I'm going to download a bunch of episodes. I'm excited.
All right.
Okay. Let's get to our Unleash because I've got to talk about this show.
It's time to unleash.
You said you're, what, one episode in of the Manti Te'o doc?
Yeah, I'm 10 minutes into the episode 2 of the Netflix doc. Yeah.
And what do you think so far?
You know, it's funny. Obviously, we all know the story. I remember it very well, but it just shows you how much your perception and memory changes 13 years later. Or however, like, I remember in the moment, it was, this guy's in on it. What a fraud. I remember that being the story. Mm. I'm not saying that's what I believed, but I did remember not having sympathy, as much sympathy for him on that end of it. I did know his grandmother passing was obviously real and devastating, but watching that first episode, yeah, I just felt bad for the guy, you know?
Yeah. And so here's the thing, the Deadspin article that broke it, and here's what the doc kind of left out. They implied initially that Manti was in on it, and they kind of glazed over that in the documentary. There wasn't the best reporting. It was amazing reporting because they got the scoop when everyone else just accepted it. And as people in the media, it was a great check, a great lesson to be like, just don't assume everything is fact. In fact, I've heard one person say, I forget, it's a famous quote. They say, even question your mother, assume your own mother will lie to you. And if you're a good reporter, and this, everyone accepted, it was the storyline of the season. Of course, he was a Heisman finalist, went to the national championship, all this. But Deadspin even had a quote in there that an unnamed source was 80% sure that Manti was in on it. And that's just, you can't do that. You can't do it. And a lot of people ran with that. And then you can tell, so the Times, you know, this was 10 years ago on the Katie Couric special. And she asked, are you gay? And, you know, he's laughing like, no, I'm not, you know, definitely not. And he's sitting there with his parents and it's so awkward and it's so dated because I don't think that question would be asked now.
No, and I'm sorry I laughed at that statement that you made. The reason why I'm laughing is an unnamed source said that they're 80% sure. I'm just reminded of Paul Rudd in Anchorman when he's like, 60% of the time it works every time. I'm like, gosh, that's such a misleading thing. Definitely don't know if that question gets asked. Definitely in the second episode when they kind of pull the whole, where she pulled, you know, oh, like, I'm still alive. When his girlfriend was saying, no, I'm still alive, I'm on the run. That's where I'm like, you gotta, all right, what's going on here? You gotta know now something's badly wrong.
So, yeah. I mean, it's just such a joke. And I think it's really sad because no doubt about it, Manti Te'o's a victim in this. And anyone who thinks, oh, come on, you never met her, blah, blah. Keep in mind, this kid, he's the oldest of 7 kids from an island in a very tight-knit Latter-day Saints community where everything was church and football. They were very poor. He couldn't fly to California to go meet this girl. Stanford, because it's a private school, never had to release the records that a student of that name even went there. Because remember, he said she was from Stanford. Like all this stuff. I feel so badly for Manti Te'o in this. And I think his career was drastically affected. And I wish he could sue, honestly. But I don't think they could prove that his draft stock tumbled so much because of this, but you certainly could look at his performance in the national championship game. And you're going to get this. I don't want to spoil too much, but just as you get to this part of the story, is a lot happens right before this national championship game. And it just so clearly affects him on the field, which then so clearly affected his draft. It's just, it's horrible. And honestly, I think the documentary, because they wanted to get the other side of the catfisher, Renaya Tuiasosopo, who is now a transgender woman, they wanted to get her take. And, you know, I bet they promised kind of a quid pro quo of, we'll tell your side of the story here and be fair. But just as I was watching it, I think they went a little easy on Renaya, now Naya, because I just think it's criminal what this person did to Manti Te'o and his family. And he just fell so prey to this. And
yeah,
that's my take. I'm standing behind it. I felt so angry watching it. So I'm curious as you keep going, what you think.
I do remember too, when he was thinking about coming out junior year to go in the NFL draft, watching the documentary. Now I was like, oh, if you would have just went pro after your junior year.
I know.
Oh.
His whole life would have been different.
A lot would have,
and you know,
been
he
different.
Is married now with a kid.
Yeah.
And he made a couple stops in the NFL. I believe last year he didn't play anywhere. I think 2021. I think he was with the Chargers. But oh, it's just I was so sick watching this that, you know, regardless of Renaya, now Naya's journey, and you know, all of that is fantastic. And I'm so glad that Manti has forgiveness in his heart. It makes me so mad that he was such a victim and so many people made fun of him, ridiculed him, and that he lost millions because of what this person did to him, and that he was too trusting and really just naive. He was just a naive, unworldly kid, to be honest. And oh, it is such a good documentary, though. I was gripped.
I'm finishing it tonight.
Okay. All right. Well, that was a lot of fun. Let's go ahead and get to our interview. Let's bring in Andrew Brandt. He's a former executive for the Green Bay Packers, a professor of law, writes for SI.com. Andrew Brandt, thanks so much for being here.
Good to be with you guys. Enjoyed our chat before we came on here.
Yeah, we did.
Yes, absolutely.
We did the pod before the pod. Yeah.
I've got to tell you, for those who don't know, and Andrew was with the Green Bay Packers, and my grandfather was there at the same time, Bob Harlan. And, you know, booking guests, Andrew, is way above my pay grade on this show. So I was really excited to see you coming on. And I told my grandfather you were coming on, and here's what he had to say. He said, you are highly, highly intelligent, and you did so much good in regards to cap space, especially with the Green Bay Packers, so much so that he always wanted you to speak at the annual shareholders meeting. He thought it was great for the fans to hear what you had to say. And he always invited you to speak to the quarterly board members meetings because he wanted to make sure that everyone heard from your mouth all the hard work you were doing. But he just had the best things to say about you.
Oh, that's warm. That warms my heart, Olivia, because he's a mentor of mine. He is someone that you come across so many people in your life and career that really leave an effect. And he's certainly one. There's a saying out there, I think it's by Mark Twain. It's not what you say, it's how you make people feel. And Bob Harlan, the president of the Packers, while I was there, really made people feel well. He made people feel good about their interactions with him, but about the team. And that is an underrated skill that he was so good at, Bob Harlan, just making people feel like that was a nice interaction. He represents the team well. He's a sweetheart of a guy. And his wife, Madeline, I mean, they were just wonderful ambassadors for the team and still are. And they were so good to me and my family, Madeline to my wife. And it just really, it's so nice to hear that because I have similar feelings. So back at him.
Oh, man. Oh, that's a good story. No, so true as well. I mentioned earlier you handled a lot of cap space and negotiations with players and front office, and you were kind of the go-between for a long time with the Packers. And I'm curious, as you look at a team like the Browns, who obviously Deshaun Watson was just served his 11-game suspension, $5 million, and the Browns have some cap space. And as I'm looking at it, and Jacoby Brissett is a capable quarterback and, you know, a well-liked guy on the team. And do they look at what they're investing already at the quarterback position, knowing that they still have about $40 million they have to pay Watson this year? They're still paying for the Baker Mayfield trade. Could you see them potentially bringing in someone like Jimmy Garoppolo, who's worth a lot of money and getting paid a lot of money this year, but to take advantage of a little cap space, bring him in and have him be a placeholder for 11 games? Or is Jimmy G above that and probably wouldn't even be interested?
I don't think that's going to happen. There's so much to unpack with what you asked, Olivia, because the Browns have become the story of the offseason with what they've done. Mm-hmm. I guess I'll start here. They gave the biggest contract, the best contract, player-wise, in the history of the sport, to a guy that's now suspended for 11 games and accused of this pattern of behavior over 17 months where he's seeking sex in lieu of massage. That can resonate with people. I don't understand their cap management, because they have and had the most cap space in the NFL, yet they continue to do contracts in a way that is pushing out cap. In other words, they do a big signing bonus, which is prorated throughout the life of the contract, small salary. So they keep their year one, year two cap numbers really low, and they backload cap into the future. But to me, if you've got all this cap space, why not use it? Why not load it now so you can be flexible in the later term? And I talked to someone high up in the organization, and they sort of gave me this explanation, and I'll share this with people. They think the cap's going to rise so much that the present value cap is better now than it's going to be later. And it was a long, detailed discussion, because in my management of the cap for the Packers, I tried to match cash and cap as much as possible. So in other words, if I was going to give someone $20 million in year one cash, I would try to get the cap number as close to $20 million as possible, because we had the cap room. We created that. It was hard work to do it. And the Browns are the opposite strategy. They're like, well, let's just keep loading up cap. Like, for what? Now, do I think it's for Jimmy Garoppolo? I don't, because two things. Number one, they signed Brissett. And number two, this is not news that Deshaun Watson's going away. When they signed Deshaun Watson, there's no way in God's green earth they thought he'd be playing week one. Come on. This had been out there for a year in reporting about what he's done. So I'm just saying Jimmy Garoppolo has been on the market for 6 months. They're not just going to decide, oh, yeah, now we should get Jimmy Garoppolo. No, I just think they've gone with Brissett. They like Brissett. And there's no Garoppolo on the picture, on the horizon for the Browns. On the Garoppolo question, Olivia, I think this is a really tough one, because he's scheduled to make $24 million. And the chance of him making $24 million is about the same as you or I making it from the 49ers. It's just not going to happen. So the question becomes, does he take a financial haircut and stay? Does he take a financial haircut to go somewhere else? Or do they just release him? And then he goes to zero and signs whatever he can as a third string quarterback somewhere. So I don't know why this guy has become unwanted the way he has. I understand there's an injury question with his shoulder, but this is one of the stories I just can't really figure out. Jimmy Garoppolo, as a Packer fan, I know what he's done to us, yet he has no market. He has no market. If he had a market, he'd be long gone by now.
You know, you're talking about quarterbacks. We had a lot of quarterbacks jump into new situations this year. Russell Wilson, Matt Ryan, Carson Wentz, Baker Mayfield, we mentioned earlier. And, you know, Stafford did the same thing last year, won a Super Bowl. So of this kind of rotation of quarterbacks this year in the NFL, is there one that sticks out to you that maybe we could see another Super Bowl champion similar to Stafford with the Rams?
Well, I'm going to show my bias and Olivia's bias here, because I think the best quarterback situation is the fact Aaron Rodgers didn't leave the Packers. And I think they're going to be really good despite losing Adams. But I think everyone's going to point to Wilson, because, you know, this is a team that has a ready-made defense, and they're just bringing in that one aspect that they haven't had. So we'll see what happens there. I think the real story of the offseason is another position, and that is wide receiver. I just mentioned Adams. This is the story to me, because we see some positions continue to get devalued. And I'm looking at running back, and I'm looking at tight end. And then we see the wide receiver position having extraordinary jump in value. For business nerds like me, I find that fascinating, because what's happened is teams like the Packers and Chiefs had said, you know what? We're just not going there. And Titans, we're just not going there. We're going to take cap space and we're going to take draft picks and we're going to go young and cheap at receiver. Yet you have teams like the Dolphins and the Raiders and the Eagles that are saying, we'll take that guy from you. We'll pay him $25 million a year, which is way beyond what the market was. The market was like $16-18 a year. We'll pay him $25 million, and we're going to bank on our receiver giving us extraordinary value, only second to the quarterback. And we're going to find out. Like, here it is. 2022 is going to tell us the value of receivers. We're going to see what Brown brings to the Eagles, Adams to the Raiders, Hill to the Dolphins versus the teams they left with draft picks and cap space. And I think we're going to have a great evaluation. Do you pay that market for top receivers, or do you go young and cheap and spend elsewhere? It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, the Davante Adams signing set off a trickle effect that the whole league had to play catch up. And similar, bringing it back to Deshaun Watson a little bit, is that record deal of guaranteed money is now setting a precedent for someone else negotiating his own contract in that division, Lamar Jackson. And he's doing it with his mom and no agent. Have you ever been in that position dealing with a player directly? And is that awkward representing the team in that instance?
Yes, I'm glad you asked that, because at the Packers, I'm an agent that came, I switched sides, right? So according to agents, I went to the dark side. I went to the Packers. But there are players, you know, I mean, there are a lot of names, but like a Donald Driver, Mark Tauscher, they would come to me and say, yeah, Andrew, you're cool. You know, you're a former agent. Let's do it. You know, let's have it. And I'm like, yeah, this will be fun. This will be cool. I'll tell you, Olivia, it was a bad experience. I had a lot of problems with it that I still to this day shake my head, because negotiations are raw. You know, negotiations are personal. I'm telling a person who I'm friends with, they are not as valuable as they think they are. They don't mean as much to the team as the other players they're naming do to their teams. So players are very simple. They're like, hey, Detroit or Dallas or Denver or Philadelphia or Miami, they paid this guy X. I'm better than X. Pay me more than X. And I would say, you know, it's not that simple. And we're paying Brett $20 million. And they're like, what do you mean? And I'm like, well, he's 1 year from free agency. You're 2 years from free. They're like, they don't want to hear it. And I lost relationships. I lost friendships, because they're always looking at me like, hey, why didn't he want to pay me? You know? And then I got some deals, and they were not great deals for the kid, for the players going forward, because the market would pass them by. So long-winded answer to your question is, it's tough. It's tough on the Ravens. I know it's tough. I've been there, and you're dealing with human emotion. And my saying is, when someone says it's not personal, it's business, BS. It's always personal. Now, on Lamar specifically, you mentioned the Watson deal. I am just, in sort of my world, it's really important to see what impact the Watson deal has. Because there have been two deals since. Now, you can say they're not the level of Watson or Jackson, but Derek Carr and Kyler Murray. Now, in both of those deals, there's really good cash flow, about $100 million over 3 years. But there's no bells and whistles, right? There's no full guarantees. There's no suspension, forfeiture protection like in the Watson deal. So I'm really interested in to see if Lamar Jackson can get the full guarantee. We know he's going to get a ton of money. But can he get the security that Watson got? Because if I'm Steve Bisciotti, I'm going to say, well, Murray didn't get it. Derek Carr didn't get it. And, you know, Watson was an outlier because the Falcons wanted him and the Saints want him. And if I'm Jackson and his mother, I'm like, that doesn't matter. This is the market. I've been better than Deshaun Watson. I've been healthier than Deshaun Watson. I don't have the baggage of every, you know, what everyone's talking about Deshaun Watson. So this one's shaping up, and we'll have a, you know, deadline spur action. We'll know in 2 weeks.
You know, something that's always puzzled me, and you're obviously the perfect person to ask this to, the Rams, we're talking about Stafford and their Super Bowl, and it's just blue chip talent after blue chip talent, almost to the point where you look at all these players and you say to yourself, even as a casual fan or a super fan, how on earth are they making the economics work along with all the draft picks that they're losing? Like, I really have a hard time even following. Now, you know, they get Allen Robinson, which is just when you think they're done, they reload at wide receiver, which I didn't think is possible. Is this just them being super aggressive, going all in, or is there really a rhythm to this that makes this possible?
Yeah, a little cap 101 for you, Jerry. I'm going to ask.
Thank you.
I'm going to quiz you. Okay, ready? So Matthew Stafford got this deal, which is, I'm shaking my head at this restructure this offseason. He got a $60 million bonus, 60 million. So his salary is only $1 million. This is sort of the, what we talk about with Watson. So here's the quiz. What is the cash that Stafford is getting this year?
Is it $1 million? Like on the books, you mean?
No.
Or
how much cash is he getting in 2022?
61.
61. Very good.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. Now here's the second question. 5-year deal, $60 million bonus, $1 million salary. What's the cap number?
It's $1 million, isn't it?
For 2022. How much?
Is it $1 million?
No. What's 60 divided by 5?
Oh, 60 divided by 5. Oh gosh. You got me doing math. Oh my Lord.
12?
12 plus 1.
13 million a year.
13.
Okay. You see me jump in on the plus 1. That's right. I did my big math. But
So here it is. So cash for Stafford is 61. Cap for Stafford is 13. 48 million cash over cap. Cash over cap is what people in the NFL talk about a lot. What's the cash over cap? So what is happening here is Stan Kroenke is paying Stafford $61 million on a cap number of 13 million. So there's a quick answer of how they do it. They have truly a billionaire owner that's able to use this cash over cap, I guess, loophole in ways that some owners can't do it. And they're going to pay the piper on Matthew Stafford's contract at some point. But while they're in this window of, as you say, acquiring all this top talent, they're using this, again, loophole is too strong a word. They're using this mechanism where they can load in these talented players with high bonus, low salary. Now, again, if you're the Browns, I don't know why you're doing it because you got a ton of cap room. But this is how the Rams keep doing this year after year. And Allen Robinson actually is a friend. So we talked before he signed with the Rams, and they got him, you know, like I said, the market's gone to 25 for a receiver, got him for 15. So they are one of these teams able to get players for a little less. They got it with Beckham last year, too.
Allen Robinson is one of my favorite wide receivers, and I'm not trying to hate on any of his previous quarterbacks. I just, even in the fantasy football space, I used to always just, look at the numbers he's putting up. Get him a top quarterback, and I really do think he's a top three receiver. Anyway, I love Allen Robinson.
Great thing about Allen, Jerry, is that, like you were just asking me, he asked me that stuff, too. And he's a real student of the business of sports. And that's how I got to know him. So you don't find many players that really are interested in this stuff. And, you know, one day he'll be an agent or he'll be a team executive. He's really great at that.
So, Andrew, can you explain to people who don't understand the structure of the Packers as the one outlier in the NFL with no owner? And as you talk about resources that the Packers have. And of course, like I'm looking, I've got my stock hanging in my office right here. Of course, this piece of paper that means nothing, but that means a lot to fans. And just how ultimately that has come to be and how that helps revenue with the Green Bay Packers.
It's funny you mentioned the stock, and I bought some for my sons, but you know this, right? Everyone you ask who's not a Packer fan calls that a worthless piece of paper. Right? You can't trade it. You can't sell it. Everyone who's a Packer fan says, you know, that's my most valuable possession.
Oh.
I'm like, there's this wide range.
Yeah.
But listen, we have what were called in my day and your grandfather's day was the preservation fund, I believe we called it, you know, where we'd accumulate this profit and revenue and we just put it in a fund to be used for paying players, putting it back into the team. You know, we had no owner that's siphoning off money to use for a yacht, to use for other businesses, to use for his family's private jet, whatever it may be. Now, if you ask me, overall, I was happier without an owner, but there are things I missed. You know, when we went to owners' meetings, they would sort of tap Bob and me on the head and like, yeah, good little Green Bay. You guys do, you guys are great. Yeah. You know, you got Brett Favre, whatever.
You're the only non-billionaires there.
Yeah, I never felt like we were at the same kind of respect level that Jerry Jones or Robert Kraft or Jeffrey Lurie, you know, it was just kind of this, oh, good old Green Bay. Mm-hmm. The other thing that, you know, you sometimes wonder with a billionaire owner, if you could, you know, the league has a lot of politics. So sometimes you need something, maybe little, and a billionaire owner would make a call and sort of get things done. And I do miss some of that. But then I talk to colleagues around the league and they're dealing with a negotiation that lasts for months. One day the owner gets impatient, walks in their office, says, hey, get this deal done today. And then it's just terrible to try to negotiate a contract. So yes and no, there are a lot of advantages. But what you see going on in Green Bay now is they've developed some land around their title town. They're using that preservation fund to really expand real estate and to expand areas and entertainment district that they've never done before. And it's all good, you know, and you see the financials every year. It's extraordinary. The Packers are the representation of what the NFL owners are making. They've got these media deals yet to kick in. They've got a team friendly CBA with the players and, of course, the franchise value. So it's a great time to be working in the NFL right now.
Oh, sure. And if I can piggyback on that, too, with what your impression of the Rodgers renegotiated contract is and how it is going to affect what the team has been able to do this offseason and what they're able to do moving forward. And just to make sure I get this all right, as people are listening, the original deal was supposed to run through the 2023 season. Packers and Rodgers renegotiated, so it would end. It would be void after 2022. And let's see, fully guaranteed $59.5 million next season. 49.5-ish, not guaranteed in 2024. So that doesn't leave much room to go get some shiny new toys for him, huh?
I have a different view of Aaron's contract, but I want to say this first. 2 years ago, when there was the noise about Aaron not coming back, I said, no way in hell he's going anywhere. He's there. You know, Packers weren't doing anything then. Last year, I was right. Last year, I was completely wrong. I thought that it would be the end of Aaron in Green Bay. And he came back. I guess I'm going to say I still believe this may be the swan song for Aaron because, you know, I was there for 3 years of Aaron as an apprentice and we had him in the bullpen 3 years and then we brought him out. I think that's probably what they're thinking for Jordan Love. Now, Aaron signs his 3-year deal. And as you said, Olivia, there's this weird part of it where it kicks in next year to $59.5 million. But the fine print is that's an option. So the Packers have to exercise the option to kick in the $59. So the way I look at it is a $42 million 1-year deal in 2022. And then we'll see about next year. I think with Aaron Rodgers, listen, I'm a big fan. I know people think he's weird. I got a lot of Zen in my life, just like Aaron. You know, I've done ayahuasca back in the day. But I think it's for anyone to look at either the Packers going to Aaron or Aaron going back to the Packers as more than a year right now. I think that's hard to say. You know, the guy is year to year, I think. And I think the Packers have their waiting quarterback. Now it's going to be 3 years. And what symmetry if it ends up being 3 years for Jordan as it was for Aaron. So well, let's revisit it later, but I'm looking at it a 1-year deal.
Jerry, have you done ayahuasca?
I have not, but I'm also a big Aaron Rodgers fan. And yes, I will definitely try it. Yeah, I'm with you. It would be really sad if he does go because that's just hard to. First of all, it's hard to see him in any other uniform. I don't know if he's retiring anytime soon.
I don't know if there'll be another uniform.
Right.
Yeah,
part of me like wishes it wouldn't be because I don't want to see that, but I also don't want him, the player, to go because I just enjoy watching him so much. So I could see like it must be so hard to keep emotions out. Like you said, the business and not personal thing is really sticking with me that you said. There's got to be some negotiations from your past that you still think about, I imagine, like, or could have maybe if I would have just done this, or if they would have just done that. There, you don't have to say which, but there, I'm sure there are a few that have stuck with you in your time, right?
Well, those 3 years with both of the guys was, I don't know, it was challenging. And I think I'm a better person from it, because we draft Aaron, and that whole story I've told before, but no one liked it. You know, everyone hated it, and Brett hated it, and the fans hated it, and the media hated it. And what are we doing? And they went through it again 2 years ago with Love. But every week or month, I'm dealing with Brett's side, which is, hey, Andrew, you know what it's like coming in every week, every day, and sitting with your replacement? That sucks. It's no life. And then I'm hearing from Aaron's camp, not him directly, but like, Andrew, are you ever going to trade him? Like, he's never going to play there. Like, what are you doing to him? Brett's never going to retire. Like, what are you doing? Get rid of him. And so I'm just trying to be polite and tactful and professional with both camps. Because we didn't know, you know, there's no plan like, oh, in 2020 or whatever it was, we're going to play Aaron. So it just got to a point where it became clear that Aaron was ready. And Brett would stay in the offseason down in Mississippi those years. And it was Aaron's team. And we're like having guys like Greg Jennings and Donald Driver and Javon Walker come up to us and say, James Jones, like, oh my God, like this kid, oh my God.
That's good.
And I'm like, really? Like, yeah. I mean, Brett's great, but oh my God, never seen an arm like this kid. And so it was clear we were ready, and then Brett retired, right? But then he wanted to unretire. And that was messy. And one thing about Aaron, even at a very young age, he had an extraordinary ability to block out that noise. I mean, it was the number one story in sports, not football, sports, for a month. And this kid's walking out to practice every day. And for a few of those practices, Brett's there. You know, Brett's back with his helmet. And I'm like, oh my God, what do we? And, you know, the thing is that what I tell young people all the time about who want to work in teams or cap or agents, I'm like, listen, the numbers are the numbers. What you're dealing with is people. It's all people, right? Can you communicate? Can you deal with conflict? And when I talk to young people and they're telling me, well, I studied this cap, and I'm like, screw that. Like, can you deal with conflict? Can you resolve conflict? And when you work for a team or you're an agent, you're dealing with a lot of conflict. People don't know what kind of things bubble up in a locker room of 80 players. And can you deal with that? I brought in players for interventions. I brought in players that couldn't get along with coaches. I brought in coaches versus coaches. So these are the kind of things that, you know, when young people say they want to get into sports, I'm like, be a people person. Like,
study psychology.
Yeah, it's a lot of that.
Yeah, not just 80 people, 80 millionaires sitting with their own entourages telling them they're the best things in sliced bread. So yeah, you got your work cut out for you. Andrew, you have so many great stories. We got to get you back on here.
Yeah.
Happy to do it. Happy to do it, guys.
Well, thank you so much. You can follow him on Twitter at Andrew Brandt. Check out his website, andrew-brandt.com. And there you can get his Sunday 7 newsletter. You're going to want to see that and listen to his podcast called The Business of Sports. Andrew, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, guys. See you soon.
Excited about our next guest. His training camp consists of studying the lines and running parlays. BetMGM gambling guru Peter Andrew, welcome back. Even though it's our first show together, welcome back to Unleashed, buddy.
Woo.
It's great to be back. Sorry, Liv, I decided to wear my Niners gear.
I know. But, it just had to, really had to throw a
little shade at you. That's all.
Hate it.
I like it. I'll start wearing jerseys too. Lord knows I got some. But before we get to football, Peter, just went really, really quick. Leon Edwards, how much did your phone blow up on Saturday night?
It's crazy. So I was talking to someone about this the other day. It's not like another upset in the world where, you know, Peña Nunez, Holly Holm, Ronda Rousey, where it was a huge upset from the get-go. This was after four rounds. I think Usman was minus 1,400, completely dominating. And then all of a sudden, Leon Edwards, side of the head, lights out. It was actually a bad result for us. So typically what you see is those big favorites losing are great results for the book. It was actually a bit of the opposite. So the parlays was great, but the singles, everybody was backing Edwards. So we love to see it. We love to see bettors come in and take us for a little bit. But what an amazing fight. And I think it's setting up a trilogy here, right? So looking at number three coming soon, I'm sure.
I like it. I like it. Okay, we want to get to NFL futures. Specifically this week, we want to focus on NFL awards for individuals. So it might be a good time to find some great odds on these before the regular season starts. You know, it's as we first look at MVP, I already saw at BetMGM the highest ticket and handle is Russell Wilson. What do you think? He's the favorite here, huh?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of bias from our friends in Colorado, one of our bigger states, obviously the movement there. I personally love Justin Herbert. What that team has done, that offense is absolutely loaded. I think right now he's at plus 850. I think you look at Eckler, all of his wide receiver weapons, the team, the defense looks really good this year. I know that doesn't really affect him, but I think they are going to be a real force. I know you guys talked about it last week. A little bit, I think, split in terms of what you like in the AFC West, but really, really do think Chargers not only have Herbert come out MVP, but they actually come out of the AFC and into the Super Bowl.
I like that, a plus 850. Yeah, and when I said Wilson was a favorite, he's not the favorite at BetMGM. He's plus 1,400 to win MVP, but fans certainly love him. Those in Colorado certainly love him. Josh Allen at plus 700. Why did you not say Allen?
Just a little bit too chalky. You got to put a little bit of value on top of it. And I think Herbert, across lots of quarterback stats, was top three in everything. Yards, touchdowns. I mean, really efficient year. The sophomore slump was no slump for him at all. So I think he comes out absolutely fire in year three. I think the team around him is really good. I think, you know, it's a tough division and there's going to be some really tough games to be played, but I think he's going to come out looking really good, especially start of the year.
Yeah. I'm looking at all the, you just look at not getting sucked into the Jonathan Taylor at plus 6,000 is going to be my biggest issue. Cause I just look at that. It's going to happen. One of these days, it's going to be a non-quarterback, right? It's going to happen in my lifetime. It's going to. Don't think it's quite the year, though.
The only way it happens is if Jonathan Taylor does what he did last year and replicates that, and you know, then you have to have the conversation. But I mean, you know this, every year it's MVP is a quarterback award, OPOY is the wide receiver or running back or tight end award. But you're right, it's got to happen at some point. Why not this year?
All right, Peter, I'm going to jump real quick because I'm trying not to let my fandom get involved here. It's the worst mistake you can make sometimes with sports betting. Coach of the year. And we talked, Olivia and I talked a lot about my New York Giants last year. Brian Daboll, he's plus 1,400. He's tied for the favorite for Coach of the Year. What's your feelings on Coach of the Year? Because if you could do that, then you got to go Giants over wins. I'm just saying. But I'd rather hear from you.
For what it's worth, I love Giants over wins. I think Saquon has a really good bounce back, healthy year. Daboll, amazing. I'm a Ranger fan. He was at every Ranger playoff game. Was unbelievable. But there's a theory here.
That doesn't mean anything, Pete.
But you got to make the playoffs to be Coach of the Year. That's what it comes down to. You have to have a winning record.
Yeah.
You got to be a playoff team. I think people are going to look at Dan Campbell and say, oh my God, Hard Knocks, run through the wall for this guy. If they end up going 4-13, it means nothing. And even, you know, even Daboll, if they go 8-9, that's probably not going to cut it. But for me, it's two clear options. It's Kevin O'Connell on the Vikings. I think they have a really, really good team. I know you guys talked about it last week. They're probably the team in the North that looks the most complete. They have a monster in Justin Jefferson. They are going to have a good year. And then it's John Harbaugh. So you got a team that's potentially going from last place last year, ton of injuries, ton of problems, and they're the favorite now to win their division. You got to think anybody who bounces from fourth to first and ends up cleaning up the division, they got to get a look for Coach of the Year.
I think you just actually gave us a parlay. Daboll Coach of the Year, Saquon Comeback Player of the Year at plus, what is he, plus 1,600, and then Giants over wins. That's the connective tissue. Well, those three things will happen.
Just a big Giants parlay.
Sorry, Olivia. I'll shut up now.
Mortal lock for me is, I think Saquon is at over 900 and something yards right now. I would absolutely hammer that over. We'll talk more about that in coming weeks, but I really, really like that. I mean, he is their offense. Might not be Daniel Jones, but he's going to be, you know, I think he's going to be back to his normal self. Hopefully he stays healthy.
Looking at defensive player of the year, Myles Garrett in Cleveland is tied with TJ Watt for the favorite at plus 700. And Micah Parsons, though, is the highest ticket, highest handle, biggest liability over at BetMGM. But Myles Garrett intrigues me because they play the Panthers September 11th. And that is when he will face off against his former quarterback, Baker Mayfield, who left Cleveland, obviously not on the best of terms. And there have been a lot of people to come out of that locker room with sore feelings about Baker Mayfield. And Myles Garrett just said he would love to get a couple sacks on Baker Mayfield September 11th against the Panthers. Kicking off the season in that kind of fashion and with this kind of urgency, do you like how Myles Garrett's season could start and potentially play out as he goes up some pretty good QBs in his own division?
Yeah, if given that, exactly that, you have to put a little bit of a flyer, or not really a flyer, he's the favorite, but put something on him. Because if he comes out and sacks him four times, does something ridiculous, that number is going to dramatically change in week two. And he might not have that same level of effort for the rest of the season. But if he comes out firing, you gotta put something on Myles Garrett. I'll go a homer pick with a Niner, but also you said him earlier. You know, I'll start with Micah Parsons. Mm-hmm. He's 9-1 right now. He plays every position. Last year, he literally played D-back, corner, nickel.
Yeah.
He played on the line. He played, obviously, as a linebacker. He does everything. He probably has the most opportunity to go and show off with forced fumbles, interceptions, sacks. I mean, he's going to be all over the field. I think that's a very, very logical pick. But my homer pick, Nick Bosa and how complete that defense is this year, especially their front seven, he's actually going to get a lot of one-on-ones, which is scary to think. And at 14-1, that's a great price for a guy who's probably going to get another 15.5 plus sacks. It's always a wild card, especially for a lot of these defensive players always getting hurt. But Micah Parsons, you know he's going to be there on the field. He's going to ball out. And Bosa does it every year. Obviously, he tore his ACL the one year, but he has been nothing but productive in the other two seasons that he's played for the Niners. So I think it's a pretty good price. I think it's a little bit of a misprice, but 14-1, 100 bucks when you're 1,400 bucks, not too bad.
So you mentioned homer pick. And you said you listened to the show last week, which we do appreciate. How appalled were you by my rant of the Seattle Seahawks for your lottery ticket to win the NFC West, being that you're wearing a George Kittle jersey right now? How appalled by you? Remember, I said lottery ticket, did not say sure thing.
So I was this is one of those things I'll never forget now. I was driving to the PGA Tour Superstore, almost crashed the car when I heard you say, take them to win. I unsubscribed the podcast and I realized I worked for BetMGM, so I resubscribed. But no, I like where the thought is. I think you have to take a flyer like that every year. They always talk about there's always one team that goes from fourth to first and makes the playoffs. Why not Seattle? Probably Drew Lock. Maybe that's why. Yeah, it's interesting. I think you're right in a sense. First of all, they're over in wins, spot on. They're going to play a lot of crappy teams. They're probably going to steal one from either the Rams or the Niners or the Cardinals. That's going to put them right there, 4 or 5 wins, and then they're going to squeak out one or two. But yeah, I think there's a better chance of me making the NFL this year than Seattle winning their division. So
look, I know I'm way out on the limb. I told Olivia this too. If the whatever the odds are that this happens, everyone better run and hide from me because you guys will never hear the end of that call. So, but luckily, I think you guys are safe. Okay, awards wise, because there's so many though. Anything we could just kind of narrow it down here. We went over the big ones. Is there anything else that sticks out to you award wise that you want to maybe just tell the listeners to just put a pin in for now as the odds are kind of all over the place? Offensive player of the year, maybe.
Yeah. OPOY. There's one player that sticks out to me, Justin Jefferson. I think he's going to have another monster year. I think he's still something like 20-1, something crazy. Again, that is very much a skilled player award outside of quarterback. I think he has every opportunity to be probably best wide receiver in the NFL, certainly in the top three already. That one sticks out to me. And then one that's a little bit weird is comeback player of the year. I think traditionally that's another quarterback heavy award.
Right.
But you have Trubisky, who might not be starting by week 5 or 6. It might be Kenny Pickett by that point. You have Baker, who is probably, he is week one starter officially.
Jameis.
Yeah, Jameis is another actually great example, Michael Thomas. But point I was going to make is you got Christian McCaffrey, Michael Thomas, J.K. Dobbins, Chase Young, who's not coming back for week one, but will be back sooner than later. Those are a lot of guys that are huge, huge impact players going to make a difference on their team. For me, it's kind of chalk with McCaffrey. If he comes back healthy and you know what he can do, obviously catching the ball out of the backfield and rushing for 25 times, that's the no-brainer. But those things can fluctuate so much based off performance and who gets re-injured and whatnot.
Did they say when Chase Young has that been announced officially when he's back yet? They didn't really.
Yeah, I think they've just said he's pretty doubtful for week one. I'd say they slowly getting back, probably three or four, but
that's why his DPOI is so high, right? Because right now, I think BetMGM has a plus 4,000. That might be another. So even we'll do a little very, very small Seahawks, NFC West, Chase Young, Defensive Player of the Year. It's a couple of little dollars. I'm just sad. I like action, Peter. I like long odds.
Hey, if you want Mortal Locks, listen, if you want lottery tickets, you go to Jerry. If you want Mortal Locks, bet the Ravens preseason, going for 23 in a row this weekend.
So
we'll give you a little bit of both every week. We'll try to give you a little balance to make some money or shoot for the stars too.
I love it. Yeah, last time Ravens lost a preseason game, I believe Lamar Jackson was going to be a freshman at Louisville. So a lot of fun there with that.
Yeah, and then I almost lost my preseason mind watching Thibodeau get that awful cheap shot for the Giants. So this is why I love preseason. It's fun. We all get hyped, but that and the Zach Wilson, and I'm no Jets fan. Those two things just make horrible. Me say, just start the season already. Just start it.
Yeah.
Start the season.
Get the third string guys in. That's it. Don't put any starters in. Not worth it.
I got all so right. scared. So scared.
Well, we're going to have a lot of fun talking to you throughout the season, Pete, because we can build some parlays. We can have running bets between the three of us. There's a lot of options here. So thanks so much for joining us and looking forward to catching up once the season begins.
Yeah, going to have some fun this year. Thanks, guys.
All right, we're going to have a lot of fun with Peter this year now that I know I control him so much about his Niners.
Yeah, I told you you'd like him.
I love him. That's three episodes down, and we haven't even begun to really talk about basketball yet. This is going to be so fun. I'm trying to broker all my energy out evenly. It's going to get intense, though.
Oh, I'm excited. And this week, I'm flying to London, and you told me you've got a good London story, but you're going to save it for when I've got boots on the ground, so I'm excited to hear that next week.
Yeah, quick tease. Almost didn't marry my wife because of what happened in London. It's not as dramatic as it sounds, but we'll talk about that next week and a whole lot more. Three episodes in, I'm still here. I'm not going anywhere. Olivia, thank you so much. And guys, subscribe, do all that good stuff. We'll be back next week.
See ya.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves, so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Turns out, a delightfully clean home can make for a delightful start to the day. At Mrs. Meyer's, everything they make is inspired by the garden. With plant-derived and other thoughtfully chosen ingredients, their cleaning products smell like a dream and work like the dickens, leaving your home sparkly clean and your to-do list tackled in no time. Goodness, there's no better feeling than that. Mrs. Meyer's, rooted in goodness. Visit MrsMeyers.com today.
Get in the zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today? Ah, thinking about gas mileage. You know, changing your oil with a full synthetic oil like Castrol Edge can help your engine get more miles. Right now, you can get 5 quarts with an STP Extended Life Oil Filter for only $36.99. Get started on your next job today with the parts you need when you need them at AutoZone or AutoZone.com.
Get in the zone, AutoZone.
Restrictions apply.